Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud. I can't tell you how many times I see people get pulled into the argument that debt is fraud, or I should say taxation. That's I say debt is fraud. Taxation is what do they call it? Slavery. Taxation is theft. There's all sorts of ways out there that they have created this paradigm for you to focus at the tax. The problem isn't tax. Taxation's not the problem. The government tax or provides a tax based on how much money it plans on spending. As long as you let them spend all the money they want to on all the things that they have no authority to do, then they're going to tax you, and they're going to tax you onerously. I mean, it is going to be a burden. The design behind all of this is to basically create a condition and or situation that makes this all insurmountable. So, what are you going to do? I mean, I keep on pointing out, when are you going to get involved? The only way government's going to behave or ever begin to behave the way it's supposed to is when we the people, actually start holding them accountable, period. So, I mean, keep on complaining, keep on putting up these really, you know, spiffy memes. That really makes me feel so good. I mean, it really helps, like, we've solved the problem by putting up memes. Start signing petitions. Start getting petition signatures. Start preparing to go into your county commissioners, supervisors, whatever they are, your county legislators, and demand that they start protecting you and demand that they start fulfilling their oath of office. They are basically just, they're the three monkeys. I see no evil, I speak no evil, I hear no evil. We need to change their paradigm. They need to understand either they start becoming our advocates and protectors, or we replace them. This is where you have to begin the campaign. It's way too late now. We talked about this 2 years ago. We talked about this 4 years ago. You have to start planning now for the election in 2 years. Every time you wait, every time the party waits. I mean, this is the process. Oh, well, we'll wait till filing and we'll find out what happens, what shakes loose. No, that's not good enough anymore. We have to take a full-time interest in ensuring that if we don't have somebody for this time around, we will have somebody. This is why I say you're better off voting for a Democrat or a worthless pimple than you are for some conservative Republican, because a conservative Republican is still going to do all sorts of crap because they don't care about the Constitution. They only care about their own view of morals. They only care about what they think is good. Now, some of those things you might agree with, but the fact that they do nothing when government is violating the Constitution and they let it happen, your conservative Republicans are giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I go through this. I mean, I've seen this time and time again. We get all the lip service. Oh, you know, like with the digital currency in Washington State. As a matter of fact, the guy that was the person that wrote the opposition against the digital currency bill, his name's James Walsh. He happens to also be the chair of the Washington Party, the Washington State GOP. And instead of actually calling out everybody that voted for that as those who violated their oath because they violated the Constitution, because digital currency is a direct violation of the Constitution, instead of doing anything like that, James, you know, basically just says, oh, this is a shame, you know, this is terrible. I mean, it's just, it's hyperbole. And this is what they do. And they continue to do it. And you deserve the government you get if you don't get involved and hold them accountable. Because they're going to continue playing their political theatrics. And bottom line, we're just going to continue going down this path. Until you take your government back, they will continue to try to burn you out of your home, starve you, poison you with the food that you can get. Take your property and your liberty. And I'm telling you, folks, those are synonymous. You have property in your liberties. Your liberties are your property. And it will continue to get worse. Now, this is kind of like our Feedback Friday. I realize I'm very well overcome by all sorts of things that are necessary to be covered on this show. And so where are we? What are we going to do? Well, are we going to cover the Olympics? Are we going to add a few cents to throw a couple of coins into the discussion regarding the assassination of Trump? You know, folks, there's plenty of people out there that are just analyzing. And if that's what you think you need to know, you need to know, what is there any other piece of information I need? I got to know it. Well, if that's what you want, because to me, that's just entertainment. I mean, thank God he didn't die. Now, let's pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and let's start fighting again. Same thing with the Olympics. Are we going to allow ourselves to get caught up on all of this crap? Or are we going to actually say, you know what? I'm going to start focusing on what I need to do to get this government back into check, period. Because until I do, there's no hope. There's no way we can even believe, have any faith that we're going to have the government that was by design, the government we're supposed to have. We have to demand that they comply to the Constitution. So one of the things I will say is I'm still trying. We'll have probably a few more interviews with Tammy Young, and we're going to start diving deeper and deeper into these resolutions with her because we want you to understand how important it is. As a matter of fact, I was looking at how she was comparing and contrasting. And on the website, we actually have that updated. So you can go and click on that link and go help Tammy out. She's the first, the only one that has truly gone through the process of getting it signed. I had somebody sign it and send it back to me. Good guy, but he just didn't go and get it notarized, or he didn't go get the sheriff's signature on it. But anyway, we're going to have Tammy Young back, of course, a few more times. Trying to get Representative Leah Cushman. She's been on vacation, so we hope to circle back around probably next week to get back with her. Now, there is a local candidate for Congress that I actually wanted to bring on, but I don't want to poison the water at this point. And so we're kind of putting that at bay. Now, one of the things that our producers worked out to, you know, to try to get another person or another interview, and I guess it's David von Kleist, and I guess he has the WTF report, and I'm not going to say that, but anyway, apparently he's kind of an entertainer, singer, has done entertainment, conservative talk, and so forth. So anywho, we'll probably have him on when we can work out a schedule with him. I did exchange a text with him. We might be able to do it this week. At this point, I still don't know. But things are in plans. Just want you to know. Now, let me talk about the meeting that never was. This is something I wanted to actually talk about. But I figured I would wait until we got through because I don't want to necessarily... Because when we look at the election, we cannot just take what I would say the historic evangelical approach to not vote. There are consequences. I do believe that voting for a Democrat when we're in these situations is critical because, you know, especially a two-year representative. And I say that because when we look at how important it is to have somebody represent you, then we can't just accept the lesser of two evils, especially when we know that the existing person in office has been in office for several terms, and it's just basically another rollover. Now, I've been adamant about CMR and our congressional rep. Now, by the way, Renee Holiday is that one that's going to, you know, she's campaigning to be our congressional rep. Don't like any of the people. Renee's probably the lesser of all the evils because why? I don't know if she's committed. You know, we've never talked. And until I actually have an endorsement, I don't stand behind anybody. I stand behind Tammy Young. Tammy Young for president, Tammy Young for America. That's who I stand behind. And if you get people to start signing these pledges, you should be standing behind them too. Because these people are basically saying they're primary focus and everything you can expect them to do is support the Constitution. So anyway, this meeting that never was, a little over a year ago, I had an email exchange. I called a governor candidate for the state of Washington to talk to him about the possibility of running a campaign without focusing on money. Running a campaign to create a movement by using petitions and by going around, because at this point he had, you know, some money to basically travel and to work at the county level, or at least he was going to speak to all the counties and so forth. This was a perfect opportunity where he could actually take a repository of petitions and getting people to get engaged in the petitions. And so we could have probably, in doing this, probably could have created a very strong petition team at the state level and would have been able to actually even get more petitions created and had a lot of people smart on this and created a very... So let me just explain to you that I believe that if you get a candidate in a statewide race that is absolutely an advocate for the Constitution... and actually has, you know, doesn't even have to have a lot of money, but has a little bit of clout, has a little bit of, you know, okay, we're kind of behind this guy, then there's no reason why this wouldn't take off as a movement. So anyway, we were going to have this meeting, and the campaign manager, you could tell, was kind of stonewalling because, the campaign manager said, what do you want? Okay, let's schedule a meeting. And then I laid out, you need to understand these things going into this meeting. And when I sent that email, I've got this all in email. So I sent this email to help everybody kind of understand what we need to focus on. You know, creating a movement. Not creating some money cycle process. And, you know, I get it. The campaign managers, they do it for the money. I think in many ways, many politicians do what they do for the money. So in this meeting that never was, right before the meeting, the campaign manager basically cancels and says, And so I actually did a follow-up. And I did a follow-up to Semi Byrd, as well as to a different individual that was going to be a part of this as well. And I basically said, well, you know, we're going to see how things go. But as things go, you're already fighting the establishment. You've already been told by the establishment they're not going to back you. Now, he focused on the grassroots, but he didn't focus in creating a movement like we talked about. What he did was he went around and he at least got the grassroots within the party to support him. Guess what? The establishment within the party did not like that. And now we're going into the primary. You know, one of the reasons why there's not a lot of conversation going farther forward regarding the campaign is because most of the parties, most of the primaries are already done. By the time summer comes along, the primaries are already done. This is why I'm telling you, if you're not planning on, you know, a campaign, nurturing and developing somebody right now for a campaign in 2 years from now, then you're planning to fail. You have to plan to succeed, and you have to start planning early. You have to start your attack. And it basically, when it comes down to your county representatives, your county legislators, you need to start by helping everybody understand how worthless they are, how they're just a bunch of admin pogues, that they are not standing on the Constitution. Even though you may think they're conservative, they are good guys. They're decent people. But they're not public servants. They're not the people you need in there now that the chips have been down for the past 20, 30 years. Now that we've been seeing what the heck's been going on, you need to understand what has to be done. And they need to feel the heat from you, what you want done, and that they have to respond. If they don't, this is why you're nurturing and developing somebody to actually get in their grill, to call them out for all of these infractions, these failures that are occurring, these attacks on the Constitution, not necessarily by them. In some cases, they are. They're rubber stamping crap coming in when they shouldn't even be dealing with it. More importantly, they should be calling out the state for its failures, the state legislature for being in the abysmal state of affairs that they're in. And more importantly, calling them out for failing to hold the federal government in compliance with the Constitution. That's how it works, folks. That's how it works. Sorry. So this meeting that never was, I've actually come back around and I've poked everybody and said, look, you know, we're coming into a point where, you know, it's all about money and it's a status quo campaign. Woe be unto Washington. Washington State, once again, will be leaderless because we couldn't get a leader to stand up and do what was best for Washington. And so, bottom line, who are you going to vote for? Semi Bird is not the guy that wants to stand up and do what's best for Washington, because the only thing that's best for Washington is obtaining constitutional compliance, getting the government out of things that they have no business doing. But he's going to be great in his political theatrics. You know, there's a lot of entertainment there, folks, and I really don't care. I really, really don't care. So, more importantly, let me kind of expound a little bit, because one of the things I wanted to talk about today is I wanted to dive into, after we cover some events and a meeting that I had last week, I want to dive into some of the augments of the ratification debate, some analysis, some things that I think you could really use. And what I'm going to do is, once I get these things all done and compiled, I will put them up on the website. So you can kind of go through them and go, wow, okay. Now we're diving deeper into some topics that are really, really important. I think we did a really good job on the currency last year and in, you know, some of our petitions and so forth. But some of these other things, like the admissions of new states and sovereignty, those types of things, You can't get enough of that. And I think that's really important. So we're going to get it done, but I'm not going to have time. I guess I have to backpedal because I can't get through all of this. Even if I had Paul Venable reading with me, there's just not enough time to get this done as well as cover this other content that we have to go through. And what do we have to go through? Well, as we wrap up the ratification debates in the next few weeks, we've got to get everything ready to basically take us from the ratification debates through the Assumption Act, through the Whiskey Rebellion and the Bank Act, or I should say the first bank and the creation of that. And let me see, what else? So then the Alien and Sedition Acts, would be nice to kind of cover because we definitely got to go through those. And we're already going through those with Tammy. So we're reading those. And what I'll probably do is I'll probably set aside some time to kind of dive into some analysis on that. And so that everybody kind of, you know, in a nutshell, can kind of understand why these two resolutions of 1798 were so critical. It was the point in time where we actually had champions stand up like we need to today. We need to get people developed and nurtured and encouraged to take a stand for the betterment of, for restoring, reclaiming our republic, and for the betterment of mankind. Folks, if we lose the Constitution, if America falls, mankind, it's over. We're going to move into, well, it's not over, because I know that the Lord's coming, but I sure would like to have a success. I think it's His will. He wants us to be free here. We have a chance, we have a shot of doing this without having to just wait for Him to come to save us. He's going to come. He promises He'll come. I know He's coming, and I'm sure you do too. But what are we going to do? Are we going to just sit here and watch everything collapse around us? I believe we still have the charge. We still have the responsibility to do what's right. So let's do what's right, right? So anyway, last week, I had a meeting with a great group of patriots, or I should say actually two individuals who were trying to fight this usurpation, these violations of individuals in public service using the court system, administrative procedures, and so forth. And even though those procedures exist, whether they be impeachments, whether they be administrative removals, even though those things exist, we are living in a time of a level of corruption that, and I hate to say this, and I don't want to be defeatist. As a matter of fact, I told these two, I want you to continue doing it. I don't want to be defeatist, but I'm not going to waste my time on it. What I want to do is, while you're doing that, give me the opportunity to work with other people. And the beautiful thing about this is that they're actually doing that. They're actually keying me into other individuals in the state that are very interested in taking other avenues other than the status quo. And so we had a meeting last week, and as we went through this process of talking about how and what they're going to do, and understanding the administrative procedures and all the things that were on the table, it was a great opportunity for me to be able to impart with them the resolution, the divinity or the divine nature of the Constitution, and the fact that within it, it's protected. We have galvanized in the Constitution a path of holding our government accountable, or our public servants specifically, because that's who our government is, holding them accountable and getting them removed. That is the supreme law of the land. You know, it's interesting when people actually start seeing these things for the first time, they go, wow, I understand this. You're absolutely right. I never knew this. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, it doesn't matter whether you knew this or not. What matters is, once you get the information, what are you going to do about it? Now, in this conversation, in this meeting, this has been really, really fruitful. And I'm really hoping that in the next few weeks we have an opportunity to really start expanding dramatically what we've done already initially, and that we can actually start moving forward, because I know it's too late for this coming campaign, but we can actually start creating a movement in Washington State. And you can do this too, folks. You just have to have people that are networked, that are real patriots at the party level. We'll talk more about it when we come back. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so if you know a few people, if you get involved in your party, because bottom line, the party will not get behind the Constitution. But I'm telling you that the people that are involved in the party, lots of them want to. And they have no idea that they're not being involved in the Constitution because they're blindly following the party lead. And they're basically, oh, yeah, this is all good. And it's because they basically wrap these people in the flag and conservatism because, oh, we're conservatives and what we're doing is conservative. And it gets these people to think that that's the good thing. They don't realize that right there, the ambiguity of what conservative is, they don't recognize the fact that it's not constitutional. Because when you start creating the comparison, when you start saying, well, conservative is, you know, kind of this moral position, you know, right for life, you know, stopping sexual dysphoria, stopping the CRT, stopping those types of things. That's conservative, but it doesn't attack unconstitutional government. It kind of could look badly upon the invasion, but they never use the word invasion because that's constitutional. You see, invasion is the word in the Constitution. So they don't want to invoke that. They don't want you to become smart, at least the operatives in the party. And it's hard to believe that these people really are, they understand what they're doing. They're just been told, and the way it's sold is kind of like the way we've been conditioned. And I saw a TV show not too long ago. It was a Law and Order television show. And this was about a patriot, the Sons of Liberty, actually, that was outside of New York. I don't think it was in their jurisdiction, but the robbery that occurred was within their jurisdiction. And this was a group of people that kind of lived maybe out there in Orange County that, you know, started getting organized and starting to buy arms and so forth for an armed revolution. Folks, the armed revolution is a path of resistance, but that path of resistance will not save liberty, nor will it save our Constitution. All it does is it opens us up into a conflict where we have no control of the outcome. The only way we can have control of the outcome is to use the civility and the process within the Constitution by using petitions. And the funny thing is that these groups don't even recognize this. Why is it that they're so focused on their arms? Why is it they're so focused on the convention, the Article 5 convention? Why is it that they're so focused on using the court? Why is it that they have no idea? Why is it that they do not understand interposition? Why? Because if you start garnering the fact that you have the authority to call these people out, it's not just you. When you get the people all understanding this, when we finally wipe away the bad indoctrination and help everybody understand what the real process is, then there's no helping them. I mean, they're going to lose. Because as Madison and everybody says, even Sun Tzu acknowledges that the power, the political power, comes from the people. If you've got the people, if you've got the movement where this is what the people want, that's what the people will get. And if the people want to preserve this country, then they can. They just have to basically start working and uniting together and taking that stand on the Constitution. It's just that simple. So, excuse me. So in this meeting, we started, you know, kind of agreeing and trying to get everything faced for, you know, future work. Now, we kind of went our separate ways last Thursday, and we're going to be getting back around, but I'm letting them focus on what they need to do, because I don't want to be the distraction in trying to tell them something else that they need to be doing at this point, if that makes sense. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring up charges and trying to go into the administrative and court, both the court and administrative processes, to basically take out Bob Ferguson. Bob Ferguson is the attorney general who is running for governor. Now, I'm going to tell you, folks, Bob Ferguson, you think Washington State is bad? Bob Ferguson is a very, very corrupt individual. Now, when you look at the fact that he has been a man in a public service office that underneath Jay Inslee as the attorney general, who was violating the rights of the people, Bob Ferguson was obligated to step in to say, Mr. Inslee, Governor Inslee, what you're doing is unconstitutional. And as a matter of fact, he's been approached by many people, and some people have told me that he's fully aware of the corruption in this racket that they're running. So in a conversation with another gentleman that I got connected to after this meeting on Friday, come to find out this guy by the name of Cody Hart actually is calling him out and taking him to task through this administrative process, using the Constitution and the law, the state laws or the statutes or what have you, to basically get Bob Ferguson removed. Now, I'm just telling you, corruption protects each other. I mean, it's just like a den of thieves. Until you actually have an honest, open, level, you know, a just playing field where the law is going to be adhered to, you know, the chances of you actually becoming successful, it's not that I want to be defeatist. It'd be nice to start getting rid of these people. But here's the thing you have to think about. Okay, you finally got rid of somebody. You got him and you got him out of office. Now what? Well, we get the next person. But what if the person that goes in and replace all of these people, they're equally corrupt or they don't understand, and they get pulled into the same processes and they do things for themselves as well. Maybe they're not as bad, but how is what you're doing really saving and turning this country around? It won't. The only way we can actually save this country is not only calling these people out for violating their oath, but calling them out for the violations of the government, these powers that they've assumed, these laws they've created without authority. Just replacing the people doesn't do it. We have to get rid of the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services. These things have to be demolished and basically obliterated. And I'm not talking about the people. I'm just saying that they have no authority to exercise these powers, these roles, these responsibilities. They have no authority to possess these properties that are not enumerated within that Constitution. And so as we lay this out, and we, you know, start looking at, oh, okay, so we've got all of these problems that the government is owning, possessing, exercising, and so forth. And if we're just replacing the people and not stopping the spending and the size of government and putting it back into scope within the framework of the Constitution, then we're really doing nothing other than a futile exercise of changing one puppet for the next, because everybody has seen or heard the meme that even though the puppet, you know, is changed, the puppeteer is still the same person. The person who is pulling the strings, what is it, the man with the puppet, the marionette, I think it's what the person's called. But anyway, that person that pulls the strings on the little stage with the puppets, that's the same person, even though there's multiple characters there, or a couple of people, what have you. Nevertheless, so as I deal with folks like this, the last thing I want to do is I don't want to be defeatist. I want them to continue trying to do, but I'm trying to convince people. And that's the beautiful thing. We actually had the success where we're going to start working and supporting each other in parallel efforts. And hopefully, between now and this, the end of the election, we'll actually have a concerted effort in multiple counties. And this is what you could be doing, folks. But it really does require exposing ourselves to people at, you know, the county and state level. And you'd be surprised. You're going to find really good people out there. You're going to find people, you know, that are really out, you know, for themselves. And they're doing it to create a name for themselves. A lot of these people become politicians because that's what they want. They want that power as a politician. They want to be a powerful sheriff. But I'm telling you that they can't do it. A powerful politician can't do it. The Constitution does it. And that's what, if they're going to exert power, the only power is to get and point out what you have to do by the Constitution. The Constitution says you have to do this, or you can't do those things. Those things are not within the Constitution. Now, that doesn't build you up, but what it does is it tears down illegitimate government. And that's the whole point. That's the whole secret here. So anyway, so that kind of laid out the meeting that we had, as well as the meeting that never was. Now, a couple of things that I might as well point out is we are working on a petition, and we need to get this done quickly. And so I've got to get two more petitions done. I've got to get this petition on foreign ownership. And I'm going to have to put that on the back burner so I can get this Kamala Harris petition done. Because bottom line, Kamala Harris is not eligible to be president. And the fact is nobody, there is no one, there is no gate guard to that office anymore. The Supreme Court isn't doing it. The federal government, the Federal Elections Commission, and there's not one state in the union that is acting as a gate guard. Does this person meet the natural born citizen requirement? She is not a natural born citizen because she was not born with parents who were citizens. Had her parents naturalized before she was born, then she would have been a natural born citizen. But they didn't. And as a matter of fact, I think there's no evidence. I've got the lawsuit. I'm going to crack that open this week. But we want to get this petition done. And we will prove to you that Kamala Harris has no constitutional authority, or she does not comply to the eligibility requirements of that office. And so that way, we believe we will give you a good petition that can get people engaged in your community to go, wow, we didn't know. Just like Obama. Obama wasn't. Now, see, here's the thing. Obama was born to a mother who was a citizen, but the father was not. And the original natural-born citizen criteria was that the father had to at least reside in the United States. He had to have a residency in the United States at some point in time. And that Obama's father never did. So anyway, I think that that's really important. We want to get that done. The other thing we're working on, and we're ardently working on, is this the ability for foreign entities to own any type of land, resource, corporation, or anything like that. And so that petition is pretty close to being done, but we want to get this one petition done first regarding Kamala Harris. So those two are in the queue, getting finished. Now, the other thing that kind of kills me, and the fact that this is just happening, so I figured, you know, not a lot of people watch what's going on in the background, but the U.S. Treasury this past week, Janet Yellen, at the World Economic Forum on Saturday, yesterday, said that $3 trillion in new capital in the United States is required each year to combat climate change and deem the global transition to a low-carbon economy. In other words, they're going to kill us because they want to get rid of people. Now, that's one thing, and I expect her to say that. Explain to me how the person, as the Secretary of the Treasury, has any role and responsibility of talking about global and climate change, and she's literally transitioning us economically from a fixed gold and silver currency to some a low carbon economy. That takes an amendment, my friends. They're doing things, they're going so far beyond the powers of the Constitution, what they're supposed to be doing, that nobody even questions this crap anymore. And oh yeah, you know, I hate to say this, I hate to be the guy to provide you some bad info regarding Trump, but I'm going to have to, because Trump just pitched a plan. He pitched his plan to basically provide for a cryptocurrency. He wants to make the United States the crypto capital of the planet and Bitcoin the superpower of the world. What does that mean? In other words, he wants the government to ingratiate itself within a crypto digital currency. In other words, he's all in favor, and everybody's going bonkos. Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have his digital currency instead of FedNow. What's the difference, my friends? What is the difference? The Constitution requires them to only have a gold and silver coin currency. People don't care about the Constitution. They're going to continue causing all sorts of problems that is going to destroy us, because we all know that the day they get rid of the gold, the physical currency, physical currency, is the day you really possess nothing and they have full control. We have to maintain the Constitution and those constitutional requirements. Now, what I want to do is I kind of want to cover some things that I've added to the ratification debate. So one of the things I started with this week was I actually dove into the Virginia ratification debate, because that's what we just covered. And so as I was doing that, you know, I noticed that there were lots of little things that we needed to, you know, kind of add. And some of the stuff was regarding money. Some of the stuff was regarding armies. And some of the stuff was regarding the militia. we kind of covered a lot of this, but none of this stuff that I've got in here is something we really covered. And so I've got 30 pages of things that we've never covered out of the ratification debates. And this only includes, I believe, Massachusetts and, let me see here, South Carolina. Massachusetts, South Carolina, and Virginia now. So I got 30-some pages with just three states. And I'm not even done, but I'm kind of done on one topic regarding the armies and so forth. As a matter of fact, one of the things I noticed when I was diving through, because I was trying to find out where they covered Article 4, Section 3. And because they dove into a lot of detail in Virginia, and especially the Powers Clause, Article 1, Section 8. They spent a lot of time on this. And technically, what they were supposed to do is they were supposed to go line by line. But because the anti-federalists kept on bringing up and subverting that procedure of going line by line, they, oh, well, what about this? And they wanted to go back to some of the same problems. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I pointed out was they kept on challenging the authenticity of what the commission did, or I should say what the delegates did in the convention, how they violated their commission. They were supposed to, they should never have done this. And it came up, and this, we already proved this with Paul and I reading this past time, how I pointed out how Henry or others, other anti-federalists, brought this up, and how Madison or somebody else would say, really? You want to bring it up again? We've already put this issue to bed. How many times do we have to put this issue to bed? Stop it. So anyway, so because they did all of those things, they really had a hard time going back and forth regarding the new, or going through, I should say, each clause or each line of the Constitution. So as I was negotiating through, or navigating, actually, I was navigating through the Constitution, and as I was looking at, you know, where is Article 4, guess what? Article 4, Section 3. Article 4 was brought up, I believe, the last day of the debates. In other words, the following day is where they actually started making recommendations of amendments and what to do and, you know, how to get to a point where they could ratify the Constitution. In other words, the final day of debating is when they finally got into Article 4. And this is what they covered, because this... This is so good because this was, again, at the end of the final day. This is the end of the final day of debates of the Constitution. There's only like three or four people that made comments, and they were very short comments. And this was, and so Article 3 or Article 4, Section 3 is the admission of new states into the Union. And so Mr. Grayson basically says, Mr. Chairman, it appears to me, sir, under this section, there can never be a southern state admitted into the Union. There are seven states which are a majority and whose interest it is to prevent it. The balance being actually in the possession, they will have the regulation of commerce and the federation 10 miles square wherever they please. It is not supposed then that they will admit any southern state into the Union so as to lose that majority. Then Madison replied, and he said that he thought that this part of the plan was more favorable to the southern states than the present Confederation, as there was no greater chance of new states being admitted under the Articles of Confederation. Now, let me just focus on this one little point. The first state to join the Union after the Constitution was ratified was Vermont. The next state that joined the Union was Kentucky, which was a southern state out of Virginia. The next state that joined the Union was Tennessee, another southern state out of North Carolina. And so as we kind of look at where the states that were joining the Union, you know, Grayson was just trying to say, oh, well, and technically maybe Grayson was thinking that because South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia had forecasts that took the state all the way across from the Atlantic to the Pacific. If you've ever seen the map, they actually projected that that land would be continuous all the way across the continent. So it would literally be South Carolina would be one stripe, North Carolina would be another stripe, and Virginia would be another stripe. And so when you think about the fact that if they could only be three states and they took up all that land, then all the other land north would become states, which means that the Senate would actually become, if he had that paradigm, I could understand why he would think that the Senate would be dominant or predominantly, all of these new states would be predominantly abolition and would be predominantly against slavery, that they would get rid of that. However, he was wrong in making that assertion because those states, because at that point in time, Virginia had this land and the land to its west was a territory, which was the territory of Kentucky. When that state was ready to be joined, it could not be adjoined to Virginia because of Article 4, Section 3. Now, again, we're looking at just a couple of sentences from Grayson and Madison regarding this one section of the Constitution, where there would be lots of debate regarding admissions of new states. However, what does Mason do? Because we're coming to a close. So Mason then completely obviates the entire convention, and he asks everybody to basically take a retrospective. This is what he says. He wanted to take a retrospective view of several parts which had been before objected. He endeavored to demonstrate the dangers that must inevitably arise from the insecurity of our rights. In other words, instead of talking about the article and the section at hand, he wanted to make sure he had a last-minute comment to get everybody to say, hey, there's so many dangers here, we don't want to ratify. In other words, he took a summary view. He already started a summation while they were still supposedly debating the Constitution. So Mr. Lee of Westmoreland, who had become all, you know, pretty vocal by this point in time in the debates, he actually just, you know, got up, but this is what he says: Mr. Chairman, my feelings are so oppressed with the declarations of my honorable friend, in other words, what Mason just said, that I can no longer suppress my utterance. I respect the honorable gentleman and never believed I should live to have heard fall from his lips an opinion so injurious to our country and so opposite to the dignity of this assembly. In other words, he was calling Mason out for politicizing and trying to actually stop this, the one thing that was going to save the Union. Obviously, Mr. Lee of Westmoreland was a Federalist, and he really believed that the Union was in peril. This is why they were having these conventions, folks. The Union was in peril. Congress knew it, and many of the people knew it. The only people who were in denial were those people who were sitting at the trough of power in these larger states. This is, Paul and I have been covering all of this, that the cabal in these states did not want to surrender their power so that the Union could actually coalesce, unite, come together, and grow. They wanted to keep it from growing. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.